Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Bruce Alpert, Alice Bryant, and Dan Friedel. Later, Ann Ball will have this week's Science in the News report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A new public opinion survey shows that more than 76% of Filipinos approve of the job President Rodrigo Duterte is doing. The survey found 76% of those questioned were satisfied with Duterte's performance during his first 3 months in office. Only 11% said they were dissatisfied. 13% said they were undecided. The organization Social Weather Stations questioned 1,200 adults from across the Philippines September 24th to 27th. Duterte has been sharply criticizing opponents of his deadly campaign against suspected drug dealers and users. He has openly insulted American President Barack Obama, European Union officials, the United Nations, and others. American, EU, and UN officials have spoken out against the anti-drug campaign, which has killed more than 3,600 people. Duterte reportedly has permitted death squads to kill accused drug offenders. Duterte took office last June. He won the election largely on a promise to end crime and corruption within 6 months of taking office. He told reporters his anti-drug campaign had cut crime in Manila by 50%. He said he does not expect Obama or EU officials to understand, in his words, the pain we are suffering from the country's drug problems. Duterte said of the U.S. president, "Mr. Obama, you can go to hell." The United States and the Philippines have a long history of strong economic and defense ties. But Duterte recently said his country had reached a point of no return in relations with the U.S. He promised to seek closer ties with Russia and China to open up the other side of the ideological barrier. The country's Secretary of Foreign Affairs, Perfecto Yasay, wrote this week about the state of relations. The first line is, "America has failed us." Yasay said Duterte is compelled to realign Philippine foreign policy and not give in to U.S. demands and interests. He said the United States has used a carrot-and-stick policy to guide relations with the Philippines for many years. He said the policy was used to, in his words, force Filipinos into submission to American demands and interests. Yase wrote that the Philippines had learned from this experience. He said the country would no longer permit China or any other nation to bully us or deal with Philippine interests under another carrot-and-stick policy. Molly Koshina is a spokeswoman for the U.S. Embassy in the Philippines. She told Reuters that U.S. officials do not believe Yasai's comments reflect the current ties between the two nations. Frankly, it seems at odds with the warm relationship that exists between the Filipino and American people, Koshina said. I'm Brian Lynn.
It sounds so nice. My good friend. It is what some members of Congress say about their fellow lawmakers. But Chuck McCutchen and David Mark offer the not-so-nice meaning. They explain the real meaning of my good friend and other words from American politics in their book, Dog Whistles, Walkbacks, and Washington Handshakes. The authors say that members of Congress often use the phrase, my good friend, to refer to a person they do not like. The official may not even be able to stand the good friend. Another example of words that mean something different than they appear is, I want to spend more time with my family. Members of Congress often say this when they are resigning or giving up their jobs. While it is true that members of Congress often spend many days away from their families, the authors say that politicians use this expression when they do not want to give the real reason they are resigning. The real reason could be that they did something wrong, or they just found out that they are unlikely to win re-election. However, some government officials say they really mean it when they say they want to spend more time with their family, McCutchen and Mark added. McCutchen and Mark explained that words used by government leaders and politicians can be very confusing. They said their book is an effort to explain the hidden meanings. Here are some other examples from their book. Slow walk means to delay something from happening. An example, when Senate Democrats brought up a bill to reduce climate change, Republican opponents demanded that every page of the 492-page bill be read out loud on the Senate floor. Officials eventually voted on the bill, but getting there was a slow walk. Revolving door. It does not refer to a real door that moves from the open to closed position. Rather, it refers to the common practice of going from a government agency that regulates a business to working for that same business. Activists say that politicians cannot govern well if they are always passing through the revolving door between government service and private industry. Washington handshake. The authors say this phrase describes talking to a person while looking over his shoulder in case a more important person enters the room. You can be sure that when the more important person arrives, the discussion with the less important person will stop. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Nonprofit aid group estimates more than half of the refugees who are resettled in the U.S. each year come from agricultural backgrounds. These refugees bring valuable farming skills as they rebuild their lives in their new communities. VOA News spoke with some of the refugee farmers who are planting new roots in Charlottesville, Virginia. Don Suba is a farmer and refugee from Bhutan. During the growing season, he and others clean and sort the variety of vegetables that they harvest. "I like to work on the farm because I can grow my own food and eat healthily," he said. Suba lived in a refugee camp in Nepal for 18 years before the U.S. resettled him 6 years ago. He is glad that he can use the farming skills that he learned in Nepal. Suba and other refugees from all over the world are joining the New Roots program of the nonprofit International Rescue Committee, or IRC. The program uses empty lots in cities for farming. The New Roots program began 10 years ago in San Diego, California. It has since spread to more than 20 cities across the country, including Charlottesville, Virginia. Brooke Ray is the New Roots manager in Charlottesville. She told VOA News that the program offers many opportunities.
New Roots really has a lot of different parts. First and foremost, it's a chance for people to use the skills that they've already had in gardening and farming. But it's also a chance for people to meet their neighbors and interact with the community and bring home healthy food.
These farmers grow many kinds of produce. Some of this produce is common in their home countries, but not familiar to the American market. As part of its New Roots program, IRC offers the Micro Producer Academy. At the academy, refugees can learn sustainable farming and small business skills, which can be another source of income. Brooke Ray explains that these farmers usually have to adapt to new ways of farming.
What we do there is take the skills and knowledge that everybody has and talk about how to apply it to the U.S. A lot of people have grown in very big space, and here you have to grow in very small space. We also talk about marketing and pricing and the seasons in the U.S.
The refugees sell their produce directly to local restaurants. Adam Spar is a chef at a local restaurant. He says that the refugees' produce is excellent.
Their produce is exceptional. You can tell that they spend a lot of time, a lot of care, a lot of love goes into whatever they grow.
The refugee farmers also convert empty lots into a lively weekly market where neighbors with limited incomes, especially refugees, can buy fresh produce at low prices. But they are not the only customers. Jane Ray buys food at the market.
Well, I come every week. The vegetables are beautiful and freshly picked, and I have lots of recipes to use for them, and the prices are extremely reasonable.
The refugee farmers may not be able to quit their jobs to farm full-time, Brooke Ray says, but the program is helping them build strong roots in their new communities. I'm Alice Bryant.
When she was a girl, Zandile Mzazi loved to sing. She tried to sing along with stars like Whitney Houston.
And I will always love you.
She did not know her love of singing was the first step towards an opera career. Mzazi had a good voice from a very young age. She says she was a skinny little girl when she won the lead role in a school musical. But she was showing off her strong voice even on the day she was born.
My mom said when I was born, the first day, I cried so much. She said, my gosh, those lungs, the nurses from the entire floor of the hospital, they came because they thought maybe we were slaughtering this child, you know?
Mzazi got her professional start singing religious music called oratorio. The music is like opera, but the music has religious themes. Handel's Messiah is a well-known example of oratorio. She first heard that kind of music from her aunt. And just like when she listened to pop music, she could sing along with Handel's composition.
And I could sing the Messiah jeepers from the age of 9. I listened to opera recordings and I imitated the sound that I was hearing. Little did I know that actually I had something very special.
As a teenager, she heard a South African opera singer on television. She started to sing along. That is how she discovered opera. One thing she likes about opera, she said, is its sadness and drama. Mzazi also said opera music is right for her talent. She said she does not think she has a big voice, but her tone is a good fit for opera.
Whenever I perform and I hear my sound, it shocks me because it is really incredible that I'm so blessed with this instrument.
instrument of her voice carried Mzazi from local shows to a performance in front of Nelson Mandela. She also sang for the President of China in Mandarin. Last July, she went to Europe for a voice competition. Mzazi came in first out of 80 singers from around the world. Now Mzazi is planning to go to Europe to continue her career, but she still calls South Africa home. I'm Dan Friedel.
This is the sound of a fish singing. It is a male fish, a plainfin midshipman, to be exact, from the Pacific Ocean. He is singing or humming a love song to get female fish to come and visit the nest he built for their eggs. Scientists have wanted to know why the male plainfin midshipman sings only at night. A study published in the journal Current Biology provides some answers. Laboratory experiments showed that the fish's song, that low foghorn-like sound, is controlled partly by a hormone, melatonin. Hormones are natural substances that influence how bodies grow or develop. In the human body, melatonin tells us when it is time to sleep. Andrew Bass is a professor of neurobiology and behavior at Cornell University in New York State. For nearly 30 years, he has been studying the plainfin midshipmen and the sounds they make.
It was always remarkable how right after nightfall, if you're recording from a bunch of nests in a bay, the bay just comes alive with this sound. It's like it suddenly turns on at night.
Plainfin midshipmen are olive brown in color. They grow to be up to 38 centimeters long. The fish gets its name from rows of organs lined up on its underside. These rows are bioluminescent. They produce light and shine in the water. Long ago, people thought they looked like the buttons on navy clothes. In the late spring and summer, the males move from waters deep in the ocean to more shallow waters close to land. There they build nests for females to leave their eggs under rocky shelters. Then, during the night, the males produce their sounds. Often, a group of them gather together and start humming. But how do they make these sounds? Unlike people speaking or birds singing, you cannot see the fish making the sound. It comes from organs inside. Their gas-filled swim bladder and their vocal muscles help them sing. Bass says the vocal muscles are hidden deep inside the fish's bodies.
And they contract those muscles at very high rates, and that vibrates the swim bladder, and that in turn generates a vibration in the surrounding water that makes the sound.
They can make that sound non-stop for hours at a time. But once a female arrives, mating begins, and she leaves her eggs, the male stops singing for the night. It is the male that then watches over the eggs until they hatch, and the young fish can swim on their own. The fish experiments were done in a Cornell laboratory by then-student Ni Feng, who is now at Yale University. It was her idea to study how melatonin affects the fish. The researchers had no idea how the hormone might affect the fish's ability to sing and hum. The fish were kept in rooms where lighting could be controlled. When it was always dark, the fish hummed as they would at night. They followed their internal timing, or circadian rhythm. But in bright lighting, a condition that lowers melatonin production, humming was suppressed. When kept in normal light, but given a melatonin replacement, they continued to hum, but at unpredictable times. So, unlike humans and even birds, the melatonin did not put the fish to sleep. It had just the opposite effect. Andrew Bass says, "The study shows how incredibly versatile hormones are."
So here we study melatonin in our animal, right? And instead of suppressing calling or putting them to sleep, essentially, it actually somewhat acts as a stimulant. Again, it's the go signal that says, okay, make more hum.
He says that by studying how different animals react to melatonin, researchers will get a better understanding of how it works.
We will reveal very fundamental mechanisms of just how this hormone, in fact, controls daily sleep-wake cycles in all animals.
The midshipman fish are not the only ones making sounds. In fact, long ago, fishermen would listen carefully to hear where the fish were. Bass says he even found a report written in 1924 about the plainfin midshipmen and how they hum at night. In the 1980s, people living on houseboats along the California coast did not know what to make of those sounds. Bass said they thought the sound came from either an underwater power line, a nearby water treatment center, a U.S. Navy experiment, or maybe even beings from other planets. The boat owners found out the sound was coming from the male midshipman looking for love in the night. Like whales and dolphins, other sea creatures, the midshipman fish make different kinds of sounds for social communication. For example, the sound they make when protecting their nests from possible invaders is different than the one they make when calling a mate. Bass says that in the end, humans and other animals are similar in certain behaviors, in this case, the ability to produce sounds. He says these fish and the things he learns about them never cease to amaze him. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Thank you.